you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money, but are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Having read her moving historical political memoir, British, I asked Afua Hirsch if we might have a conversation for River Cafe Table 4. Lucky for me, and lucky for all of you listening today, she said yes. Now, before going into the restaurant for lunch together, we're going to talk about life, her grandmother's food from Ghana, growing up in Wimbledon, surrounded by her family, and much, much more. Lucky us, lucky me.
My Ghanaian grandmother, who turned 93 last week and lives around the corner from me in Wimbledon, she came to the UK with her children, including my mum, in 1962. My grandmother is of a generation, I suppose, of the first mass immigration of Ghanaians to London, and it really was a community, and many of them were very highly educated. My grandfather had been to Cambridge in the 1940s on a colonial scholarship. They were diplomats, they were doctors, nurses, entrepreneurs, and my grandmother's house was a place that people who had recently arrived would come, stay, be fed. And when I talk about my grandmother's house, I can smell it.
What do you smell?
I can smell fish, dried fish, salt fish, grilled fish. I can smell kenke, which is a very Ghanaian dish, which my grandmother actually used to make and sell at the market.
What is it?
Kenke is made out of fermented corn dough, and then you knead it into these dumplings, and then you wrap it in banana leaves, and then you steam it to eat it, and then you eat it with usually fried or grilled fish with this incredible pepper sauce called shito, which is made out of dried shrimps and pepper. It's very spicy, salty, oily, shrimpy. Yeah. It's absolutely delicious.
You were growing up in, as English a community, I know Wimbledon a bit,
yeah,
but it is. Did you go to school and eat the kind of school food, or did you go after school and eat the kind of fast food? Did you experience that, or did you always come home to wanting to eat the food of...
Yeah, we definitely ate dinner together every day in my house, and that was the meal you would look forward to. Mm-hmm. But I loved school food. I'm ashamed to say. I just remember really oily lasagnas and lots of puddings, because my mum, I think coming from Ghanaian heritage, wasn't a big dessert person. Mm. And I was all there for the steamed puddings, the roly-polies, the sticky toffee pudding, the crumbles, the pies. Yeah. Absolutely.
What age is this?
Loved
this
them. From like about 7, I remember getting.
To, yeah.
Well, to until about 15. And then I started to lose interest in, you know, traditional nutritionally balanced meals. Yeah. And then I was a real party girl in my teens.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
So I got into clubbing, and we would always have McDonald's at like 3 in the morning on the way home, which in hindsight is terrible. But you get away with a lot, I suppose, when you're that young.
But it also is very liberating that you ate so much as a girl, you know, that you didn't worry about, you know, how you looked or fashion or weight. Or
I wouldn't say I didn't worry about it, but I definitely loved food.
Yeah,
and I loved food more than I wanted to try and change my body.
Yeah.
I do think it was a much less healthy time for girls' body images than it is now. I mean, now, of course, there's so much pressure on social media, but I also feel really positive about the diversity of images of women who are celebrated as beautiful now. Yeah. It's just night and day from when I was growing up. And I think I find it so much easier to see women who make me feel positive about my body now. And I hope that for young girls and women growing up now, that helped shape their perceptions. So that didn't really exist. And I did definitely struggle just because I was the only black girl in my environment a lot of the time. You know, I looked different. I had different hair texture. I had a different type of figure. There were so many things about me that didn't conform to what was being celebrated. I was this little mixed race girl growing up in a world that at the time, you know, I was born in 1981. It wasn't as prevalent as it is now. I very rarely or never saw other people who looked like me. And I was trying to work out where I belonged. You know, in between these communities, I had this first generation Ghanaian community on my mother's side. And then I had on my father's side a also complicated family, because my grandfather was a Jewish German refugee. Mm-hmm. He had worked really hard to assimilate into Britishness. Understandably, arriving in Britain in 1939, he wanted to assimilate. He changed his name from Hans to John, as so many people did. He learned English as quickly as he could. He married my grandmother, who was from Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. And so even though he also had an immigrant story, a refugee story, a totally different cultural backdrop, he really didn't communicate it. I wouldn't say he hid it. He had just kind of made it disappear over time. And initially, I suppose, by necessity. And then once you've kind of assimilated, it's quite hard to celebrate.
Yeah.
And I think there was so much trauma in his relationship with his heritage because of what he'd been through growing up in the 1930s in Berlin as a child, and seeing the Nazis really kind of destroy the world around him.
Did your father cook?
No, my father's not. I wouldn't say he's much of a cook. But my dad, I think, he's really into these. And I was reflecting as I was about to come and talk to you, Ruthie. I think my grandfather, who came from Berlin, I think the thing that I can trace from him that I've inherited, that my dad certainly has, is lots of pickles. And there would always be pickles, all kinds of pickles. And my dad is a big pickler. He will pickle things. He will pickle pears. Mm. He will pickle onions.
That's very unusual.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. It was unusual that you have a passion for.
Yeah, I never thought about that until today.
I suppose it is German, perhaps, that influence of Berlin, when you have the pickled, the cabbage, the horseradish.
Oh, they'll make sauerkraut. Yes, and my dad always pickles red cabbage in the winter. So,
still.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I remember so clearly I didn't go to Ghana until I was 14, and my first memory was stepping off the plane and two things hit me. The first was the heat, which I thought was the heat from the engines. I thought, oh, they haven't turned off the plane engines yet. It's still blasting me with hot air. And it took me a minute to realize that's just the air temperature. I'd never been anywhere. And it's very humid as well. It's a very humid tropical rainforest heat. And the second thing was the smell. And the smell has never left me. And I still, every time I go to Ghana, am instantly hit with this intoxicating smell. And I've tried to work out what it is. I think it's a combination of just heat and sea air, because the capital is on the coast. Mm-hmm. And it's a quite rough Atlantic coast. There's a lot of sea breeze and mist and salt in the air. And then one of my favorite Ghanaian dishes, which, because the BA flight from Ghana lands basically at dusk. Right. And at dusk is when food vendors in the city start selling this after-work snack, which they fry outside. It's called kelewele. And it's ripe plantain diced that's seasoned with ginger, black pepper, tiny bit of nutmeg, chili, and salt. And then it's deep fried. Absolutely delicious. I made some last night, actually.
So you season it first and then you deep fry.
You season it and then you deep fry.
And then you take it out and you eat it hot?
Yeah, you eat it hot.
Yeah, and it's street food.
It's street food. Yeah. And that makes the entire city have a fragrance of kind of slightly sweet, spicy, nutmeggy air. And I honestly think it's a little hint on the air in Accra.
When you think about Ghana, because you've been there quite often, do you also think about the markets and the smells from the markets?
Oh, I love the markets.
I remember asking David Adjaye about going to the markets with his grandmother. Mm. Tell me your images of the market.
When I moved to Ghana in 2011, my daughter was 6 months old, and my partner and I decided we were going to move to Ghana and raise her there for her first few years. And my grandmother came with us, and so did my mother. So four generations of women in my family careering around Accra together. And my grandmother took me to the market to go shopping. And it's a really big food market called Batchana. And it's a problem, actually. There's so much rural to urban migration in Ghana. Lots of girls and young women from quite poor parts of northern Ghana have migrated to the city. And they're called Kayaye girls. They carry these big buckets on their head, and you can basically pay them to follow you around the market. It's not really safe work, and they often sleep outside, obviously very poorly paid. So I'd never really been to a market and seen them before. So that was one thing I really remember. But there was just so much going on. There'll be fish, there'll be meat, vegetables, everybody's haggling, everybody's talking. There'll be kind of little bits of the market where they sell magical things, talismans and weird bits of animals. There's just a lot going on. But the thing I remember is my grandmother haggling with the market vendors. And I think if you didn't know Ghana and you saw it, you'd be worried that maybe a fight was about to break out, because it looks very emotional, and there's a lot of hand gestures and very vexed facial expressions and insults flying around. But actually, I think that's just how you do business. And I remember making a vow to myself that day that I was going to learn that language, because I felt like if you can't speak that language, you just can't really get involved. You know, English is just far too polite. It's not expressive enough. I just remember seeing my grandmother kind of screwing up her face and waving her arms around and thinking, I need to be able to speak to someone like that.
You weren't embarrassed.
No, yes. I was determined that I was going to be able to do it. And I had my little daughter on my back in a cloth, you know, which is the way Ghanaian women carry their children around. And I thought, I'm going to live here and I'm going to learn this language. I'm still trying.
What are you writing now? What is your next project?
So I started my own TV production company.
Oh, good.
And I'm working on a combination of documentaries and dramas. So I'm always challenging myself to try and reach a different audience. Okay. And I love journalism. I will always, I think, write newspapers and magazines. But I'm also noticing, I think the things that have often impacted me are fiction, novels, dramas, films. And I'm really interested in reaching people so they think about themselves culturally, not just intellectually. I think that a lot of the change that really takes place on a deep level is when something touches you very emotionally. And I really want to take the message that I always work towards. I care about justice and fairness. You know, I think it's at the DNA of who I am. When you look at my family story, I've inherited it on both sides, that yearning towards freedom. I am really curious to see if I can reach people through different mediums. So that's something that I'm really challenging myself on at the moment.
And what about the fact that we're looking at a political situation here with Ukraine and the fact that the effect of that war will be on feeding the people of Africa? Because without the grain that is meant to come through Ukraine to the world, but particularly to Northern Africa, there could be huge starvation.
It's already impacting the whole continent of Africa because of energy and oil prices. Again, Africa is a huge oil producer but still relies on imported oil and gas. It's a huge food producer but still relies so heavily on imported grain. One of the consequences of colonialism is that African countries don't supply each other. They don't trade with each other. Yeah. Everything is designed for export to the rest of the world because Africa was integrated into the global economy as a place that you take from. Yeah. And that legacy exists in a very literal way. So one of the challenges is that Africa's producing huge amounts of food, but it's all getting shipped straight out of the continent. And you have nations that are in food crisis, coexisting with nations that produce food in abundance. So this has got to be an opportunity for people to look again at the structure of African economies. But it's you're talking about 400 years of colonial legacy. It's not something you can easily overturn. But I think it's a real wake-up call to just how something that happens in Europe or something that happens in Russia can have a huge and immediate impact on people's lives on the African continent. I was in Ghana the other day and everyone was talking about Ukraine. The roads were had half the traffic they usually do because people can't afford to drive their cars. So that's the reality of globalization. And I think we've got to start upping our game in terms of making sure that countries are self-sufficient as much as possible.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
I was really sensitive, I think, as a child to where there was a sense of openness for me. And, you know, people now often ask me why I self-identify as black when I'm mixed race. You know, I have one white parent, one black parent, and I self-identify as black. And I suppose I have leaned much more towards my Ghanaian heritage. And I think from childhood, well, it's two things. It's one, because the world racialized me as black, you know, and the colonial conditioning we've all inherited, it's created this really nonsensical binary and categorize people. And that was the category that was assigned to me from an early age. But also I think because Ghanaian culture is just so expansive and, you know, welcomes everybody and will over impress a sense of you have a place and you have a role. And it was attractive to me because it was a place that I could feel part of something. Even though I should say one of my earliest memories of being in my grandmother's house is of all of my aunties, when I say aunties, you know, all the women who came to the house laughing hysterically at me when I tried to speak the language. So they just thought it was very funny. And they would say, you know, they'd call me Obrini, which means white girl. And they say, look, the white girl's trying to speak Chi. And it wasn't mean. It's just how Ghanaians still often are amused by the idea that someone who has access to kind of, you know, the English establishment would choose to try and speak their language. And I think that's the colonial hangover as well, that, you know, many Ghanaians come here and encourage their children not to speak their language, but to just speak English. But it's really sad because you can be bilingual and you don't need to downplay your heritage to succeed. So I think that's a journey that many immigrant communities are on.
Well, also in terms of food, you know, I think that, you know, you say that your grandmother identified with Ghanaian food, so she was cooking the food of the culture. Maybe your mother adapted more, and do you think that she adapted more to being in the situation she was in rather than bringing the food of her culture, or did she only cook Ghanaian food as well?
No, she definitely adapted more, and I think coming here as a 12-year-old, she had so much of her formative life in Britain. Yeah. But it's interesting, and I've reflected on it so much more lately, that whenever my mom was sick, she would say, I need food of my country.
And then
she would make, and she would always make very specific things. She would make groundnut soup, which is a soup made out of peanuts, ground peanuts, and it's spicy with a kind of tomato broth with peanuts, like peanut butter in it, with meat, but it's quite light. Mm-hmm. And she would have that with fufu, which is another Ghanaian dumpling that you use to kind of soak up soup. And she would rarely make Ghanaian food except when she was either sick or suffering in some way. And then it would be definitely her comfort food. And she would always say, I need food of my country.
You love your country. And that is your country, yeah.
And so it's always been, I think, when you strip away the layers at the root of who she is. And I think having children and having grandchildren has made her reflect on her, and she does speak the language, and she does go back to Ghana. But I think more frequently, since I've become somebody who's been so connected with Ghana, I think her daughter and granddaughter have moved her back more in that direction maybe than she would have anticipated.
We've discussed the culture of food and the taste of food and the family of food. That kind of brings me to the political nature of food. And as we know, during the pandemic, many children missed school lunch, and so they didn't eat. And I think you said as well that a government and society shows itself in the way we feed our children. And what are your thoughts about politics?
I feel so angry at the way that healthy and nutritious foods have been turned into a luxury for the privileged. I just think it's one of the scandals of our lives. And when I was in my early 20s, I became vegan. And, you know, I've had a privileged life, but at the time I was training to be a barrister. I had to borrow money to pay for my education. I was living below the minimum wage, you know. And as a barrister, people think you kind of enter into this, like, super rich lifestyle. I earned £10,000 my first year at the bar, and I had tens of thousands of pounds of debt to repay. It was a real struggle at that stage of my life financially. And I went vegan because I was starting to really think about health and climate. And I just couldn't believe how expensive it was to feed myself on fresh and whole foods. Mm. I really struggled. And that's an Oxford graduate who's training to be a barrister. And for me, it was a real wake-up call as to how, if you do try and do the right thing, and you do try to be mindful of what you eat, and you do make an effort to source things that are grown locally or produced ethically, you price out the vast majority of people. And that was a period that really radicalized me about how unfair this was. And also being part of the vegan community, which at that time was very white and very privileged. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't feel included in that community. And it really made me think about why, you know, all of the black people I knew and people in underprivileged environments. I was living in North London. You look at the area around me. Every child went to the chicken shop after school and bought kind of 99p chicken, which terrified me in terms of its quality and production. And then there were all these kind of vegan and raw shops, which were for people who just had huge amounts of disposable income. And I think it's got worse, if anything. And I feel really strongly about it. And I think there's a race aspect, because black people in America and in Britain are massively overrepresented in heart disease, strokes, diabetes, and struggle to get access to high quality foods. Mm. And, you know, it's just something that I think is just rarely talked about.
Yeah, it's interesting. During the pandemic, there was a piece in the New York Times, I don't know if you saw it, was by a woman, and she said that if you want to know why more African Americans are getting COVID, and why they're afraid to go to the hospital, it's one word, and it's slavery. Yeah. You know, that really look back into the history of what the experience of being a slave in the United States was only, you know, 150 years ago. And you weren't allowed into hospitals, you didn't get to see doctors, you were fearful. And with nutrition, it's in every poor community, black or white, they don't get fresh vegetables.
There's a tendency also to see that as an American phenomenon. But, you know, Barbados is the hypertensive capital of the world because Britain ran its colonies in the Caribbean, its slave plantation colonies, the same way. And people were force-fed a diet of sugar. Yeah. And now you can actually trace the health consequences of that on today's population of Caribbean heritage in Britain. It's such a recent history. People, it's still manifested in people's bodies. And then there's the other side, which when I go to Ghana, which makes me raging that Ghana imports rice, tomatoes, so many foods that grow naturally in Ghana that are not made profitable because the market is flooded with cheap imports from America, from Europe. And instead of becoming a country that's allowed to be self-sufficient, all of these market forces, even aid, has been made conditional on African countries having to import cheap products from Europe and America. And you can trace that directly to the nutritional and financial problems that people there have. It's really scandalous. And, you know, I often kind of wonder why we're not all up in arms about it, but it never seems to be the priority.
Yeah. And so what would you do? How do we reach this government or the governments? We've had every government. I mean, go to hospital and see the kind of food they feed sick people.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Go to schools and see what they feed children. You know, go to food banks and see the food that is given.
I think, you know, and we started this conversation by talking about the political. I think that we really need to reconnect this with the political foundations of society. And I think this is where we talk about class and we talk about race. And it's so important to understand the history. Why do people on lower incomes have access to such bad food? There's this history behind it. There was a decision that was made that people need to be fed in a certain way to keep them in a certain position. African countries have deliberately been starved of their own production to keep them subservient. And I don't think you can understand one with understanding its history. And these are systems that were created. You know, they're not an accident. They're not something broken. They were designed. So I don't think you can change it without going to the root of why it was designed this way. And people need to understand and feel angry about that. So that's why I do the kind of storytelling I do, because I think that without connecting these dots, we'll always just be superficially talking about improving school meals without actually looking at the root of the class system. Our whole education system was designed to create factory workers for an industrial society that doesn't even exist anymore. And that's the conversation that I don't see happening. It often feels like it's superficial, you know, and really well-intentioned. And this isn't to undermine the work of the incredible activists who talk about food and nutrition. It's so important, but I think that joining it up with understanding how class and race works and keeps people structurally in positions where they're not thriving on purpose, I think that's really essential to understand.
We spoke earlier about food and culture and food and family and food and comfort. Your mother saying she wanted the comfort of her when she was sick, if she wanted to eat her food of her country.
Yeah.
And so right now you're writing and you're producing and you're activism, and there must be times though when you are tired or you're
frequently
sad or you're
frequently
or you're feeling whatever it is, and you just do need the comfort of food. What food would you turn to, dear Effa?
This was hard to pick because there are many foods that comfort me, but I think I would have to go when I think about in my house, in my home, if we're having a low day or it's cold and raining outside or everyone's a bit tired, the thing that I will make on demand is apple and blackberry pie, especially in autumn. And I will, I grew up with a beautiful apple tree in my garden and I don't have an apple tree in my garden anymore, but I will try and buy apples locally. And we even pick blackberries on Wimbledon Common some years. And that is the because we have, my partner and my daughter have slightly different tastes to me. But the one thing that unites us is the love of my apple pies. So I think that might be my my ultimate comfort food. And I'll even make custard, which is as English as it gets.
All right, I know where to go now when I need comfort because that sounds delicious.
It's so good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
so
much.
Thank you, darling.
To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.